Welcome to Marsha's Plate. This is an interview episode where we talk to friends, family, other community members, and anybody else we want to talk to.
Hey, brother. Hey, brother. Hey, sister. Hey, sister. Hey, sibling. How are you? Hey, brother. Hey, brother. Hey, sister. Hey, sister. Hey, sibling. How are you?
Hey, how you been doing?
Just checking in today.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Oh, my God. So y'all know I'm trying to bring y'all some fly ass, cool ass people that I have learned about and that I think are amazing out in the world. So today I'm going to bring y'all Naima Yunsa. She is the co-founder of Black Trans Art and Joy Fun, which is an org based in the Netherlands that centers community care for Black trans people with a focus on practical support to provide to the community. And, you know, it's like a focus on creating and shared space and legacy and, you know, really above all, our joy as trans people. And they're based in the Netherlands. And we want to thank you for joining us, Naima.
Thank you for having me.
So you hail, before we get to the Netherlands stuff, you hail from the beautiful Caribbean island of St. Martin. That's where you grew up.
Yes.
So you were born and raised there. So tell me about growing up. Who was loving on you? Tell me about your family unit. Like, tell me about growing up in the Caribbean.
Growing in the Caribbean was a little bit tough back in the day.
Of course.
You know how it is. And I was in a household of Catholic with my mom. She's Dominican, so I'm Dominican. My dad is from Curacao. My dad passed away when I was 7, so I don't really have that much memories with him. Growing up with my mom, it was tough because she was like the only provider in the house once my dad passed away. And outside of the house was also like, it was giving a lot of hate also because of me being who I am. People would say, why are you acting this way? Why are you moving this way? So I've always experienced a lot of like hate in high school. But thank God for my mom and my family. They've always embraced us with a lot of love and joy. So it's been tough in the islands, and finding out about Barroom, I felt like I found this outlet that can let me express myself the way I feel, you know? So I would say Barroom really helped a lot when it was to that.
So I was watching this video and you were telling this kind of wild coming out story. Can you share that story about like, you know, how many siblings do you have?
I have 3 brothers.
So tell me about your kind of coming out situation where you're, because your journey, like most of us, can be with your mom, even the accepting ones that eventually come around. It can be a road. It can be a journey. And so same thing with my mom. And so tell me about that experience, your coming out journey with your mom. And when did your kind of transition start to kind of, not start, like I hate people to be like, ooh, when did you start transition? But in your brain, like, when did you start to feel like, there's something here. What's going on?
I've always had this feeling from very young, like I was never attracted to the girls. I was always more attracted to the guys. I would always be picked on, like I said, by the way I walked or by the way I talked. It would be like, your voice is so feminine and this, that. But my mom, like I said, it was like a Catholic household and they're Dominican. So they don't have a lot of understanding when it came to the LGBTQ. And then I've always hid who I was very young. My brother came out when he was like around 12 or 13. And that kind of helped me find my way to also opening up about myself.
What number are you?
Excuse me?
What number are you in the lineup of
I'm
children?
The last one. The last baby. Yeah. So my mom has 3 guys and I'm the only girl. And the story with my mom was that she was like, oh my God, I want a girl so bad. And this is going to be my last, you know, my last baby. And I was tucked inside my mom from in the womb. She was, you know, tucked away. And the doctors were like,
word.
Your dream is actually coming true. You're going to have your girl. My mom went crazy. She bought everything pink. Like, it was just insane. And then when I came out, they got a surprise and they found out that I was actually, you know, not really a girl. But at the end, she still got her girl that she's always wanted.
Work.
And like I said, also, like, in the beginning, also, in the video I made with the Black Trans Artist Joy Fund, it's never been, like, smooth sailing. Like, my brother was the one that made it easier because he was the first one to come out. And it really hurt my heart to see my mom so devastated, and she was just so hurt. Like, she just didn't understand what was going on, but she was just hurt. Like, my son is gay, and, you know? But then eventually, she accepted him. So when she accepted him, that kind of made me feel like, okay, maybe she's just gonna accept me too. But coming out was really also rough for me. Like, it was a really rough period. I ran out of the house. Like, I stayed at my friend's house for maybe like a day or two. It was really, really hard times. But she then came around and she just learned to love us. And I found Ballroom. And then the first person I saw was Laomi. And I was like, oh my God, wait, is this a trans woman? So that when I started to, like, express myself, finding Ballroom and starting to dance.
Now, when you said you found Ballroom, are you talking about, like, through the internet, like, through, like, videos and...
Actually, my brother, yeah. He went to New York to study dance, and he came back, and he was like, yo, I came up with this crazy style. It's called Vogue. Look at this community. And we just got into it, and we were just obsessed. And this is, like, the first time we really saw, like... Well, I really saw, like, femme queens, like... you know, transitioning. And I'm like, okay, wow, is this really possible? Then I started to explore myself with, like, dressing up, and I felt better in drags than out of drags. And I would live a double life. Like, at home, I would come and dress up and go online and go on BGC and talk to the guys.
Work, BGC, yes!
Yes, I used to go on BGC and talk to the guys, you know, and then outside, I would go back as a butch queen. And then I moved here. And then when I moved here in 2012, that was when my transition officially started, because, like, I left the side of my mom so I could do what I want. I was with my brother. And yeah, I just, here I also lived a double life for, like, maybe a few months. And then I just called my mom up one day. One of my girlfriends got me hormones. And I called my mom and I was like, listen, mom, I'm going to take this journey. You know, and she was like, honey, I've seen it before you even told me. Like, it's okay. As long as you're happy, I'm happy. So, yeah, moms really know everything. She was just being a little hard at the beginning. But, yeah, she eventually came around.
I love that. I want to give a little context about BGC. So, if people who don't know, BGC is Black Gay Chat. And it used to, in the beginning, early days of the website, it was called Black Gay Chat. And then because of it, the community kind of expanded it outside of just Black and Gay, they changed it to BGC Live. And it used to be so lit, like in the OOs, we used to have chat rooms. It used to be like different forums that we would be in. And of course, like, people would be hitting you up and message you and stuff like that. Honey, we used to cut up in them forums and cut up in them chat rooms. How old are you?
35.
Yeah, so I'm 43. You were coming up when I was, I guess... you would have been a kid. You would have been, not a kid, but you would have been in your early 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have been in your early 20s at that time. Young, yeah.
Even younger. I was like maybe 17.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So, and it was, everybody was on there. I mean, everybody in the queer community was on BGC. It's kind of like Grindr now, except not app form. It's a website. And so we just go in there and kiki. So, yeah, let's give a little context to that. So how did you end up moving to the Netherlands? Because didn't you move there when you were like 20?
Mm-hmm, 22.
So how did you end up moving there?
Yeah, my brother was studying dance here, and I was also a dancer. And he was just telling me, come out here. You know, you can apply for a school here and get a scholarship and, you know, further my Korean dance, because we were so obsessed also with dancing. So that's how I came up here. Mm-hmm. And he had the house here, and I just came up here with him.
So how was that transition, like, culturally?
It was actually a relief. Like, I didn't know anything but the Caribbean, you know, and it's like so close-minded back home. And then to come to a place that was so open and so free, kind of felt like New York, because I was always obsessed also to go into New York. And I also moved to New York in 2012. But just coming here just felt very like a big sigh. Like, finally, like I can just be myself and do my own thing. So the racism is going to always be, you know.
Look, so that was going to be my question. Like, when you, we kind of romanticize, as Americans, we romanticize places like the Netherlands and places that kind of are more progressive when it comes to trans issues. But, and I've been there, I've been to Amsterdam and Rotterdam a little bit. And so when I go there, I say, it's like, you can tell that it ain't as bad as the U.S. when it comes to racism, but you can see just a little bit. It's like racism light.
It is. It really is. It really depends where you go also. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go to the countryside, honey, just be prepared.
Yeah.
Be prepared to fight. But it's like light. It's very light. We actually have it good out here. Like, it's not that bad. So
yeah. Tell me about it. Like, is it, what's the tea like in regards to like resources for trans people out there? What, because we came out there and there was like only when we went to visit like the different organizations, mm-hmm. it wasn't a lot, but we saw people trying to build something. So to explain that a little bit, what's the resources like? So if somebody is moving there and where they want to be safe, and you know, because I've actually considered moving to Amsterdam, like a really, really serious moving there. What is the resources like? What is
the resources is really hard because there's not a lot of places, like you said. Now I've heard, I just found this out last week, that there's another clinic that helps the trans girls. But for when I came out here, there was only one place, and it was called the VU Medicentrum. And here you apply, you say, you know, you want some therapy to undergo hormone therapy, and also they help you with the SRS. They used to also help like breast implant, but not anymore. And the waiting list was so long. Like, it was years. You had to wait like maybe 2 to 3 years just to actually get a first appointment. Yeah, it was crazy. So that's why I told you, like, I resorted to getting hormones from my girlfriend. And the way I got into everything, it was just like, I'm just blessed. Really, I'm really just blessed because my transition and getting my stuff was really easy. Like, I had the coolest doctors. Like, I would just talk to my doctor and be like, listen, I'm on this, can you prescribe them to me? And he just gave it to me. But honestly, if you're coming out here and you're a trans woman and you're transitioning, it's really hard. It's a long waiting list. There's not many, but now there's like small organizations. Like, there's the Trans United Clinic that's here. Yeah, that's the main one that's right now helping the girls that are not with the VU because of the waiting list. So, but there's growing. And that's why also we created the Black Trans Earth and Joy Fund. Like, I can help the girls with hormones. If I have hormones, I'll give them. Or I'll connect them to another femme queen that sells hormones, you know? Mm-hmm. I always have people that do these kind of things. And they know that people come to me looking for it. So I just, you know, connect them to people. But it's getting better.
So what about like just kind of navigating the world? So like when I was there, I didn't really have any. Now, when I say there, I'm talking about Amsterdam, because I was doing the touristy thing at Rotterdam. But at Amsterdam, I was there for a little minute. And so I was able to kind of mingle a little bit. And I don't really have any kind of issues walking around. You know, I feel like I'm relatively passable. But in that regards, even when we were talking to people and we were spilling our tea, like telling our tea, nobody was given no lateness. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very chill, especially Amsterdam. Like, touristy places are very chill.
So what about the trade, child? What about the men? What about the love? What are they giving? Like, are they fuckboys like out here, or is it a little bit more free? What is they giving?
It's crazy because I actually lived for the trades more in New York. I feel like the trades in New York and in the States have more balls than they do here. Like,
really?
It's crazy. The Trays don't really give anything. They're just chasers, low-key DLs, like,
Oh, that's sad.
I had my first relationship was when I moved to New York in 2012. Mm. And I haven't had a relationship ever since. I came back here in 2015. So just fuck boys. Just, yeah, a waste of time.
Oh, that sucks.
It does really suck. Because it's crazy. Because I know the girls probably think you can get your trade out here. You can get a trade, but like...
It ain't going to be serious.
Exactly. It's hard to find
some bullshit.
Yeah.
What about career-wise? What about working and discrimination and like finding a job? Is it hard to find a job out there?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah. Mm. Sometimes it's pretty hard to find, depending on where you're applying. Like sometimes discriminate towards, you know, trans girls, but it's not that hard like in the States. Like I know in the States they check that, or they wouldn't take you because it's not like that. It's not that extreme here. But you would bump into maybe one or two that wouldn't take me. I actually was, I applied to this job that's called Flink. It's like to order from home, groceries from home. Uh-huh. And the lady, I came up and I was like, you know, I'm trans. But from since I told her I was trans, she always used to find something to say about me, my body. She'd be like, you have big tits. Why do you have big ass? Like, yeah.
What?
And she fired me on my first week. You have a trial period, like in the States. And she didn't even let me finish my trial period. She just fired me. Yeah. But I was like a blessing because like 2 days later after I got fired, I got signed to become a model by APL.
Okay. That was, that's a blessing.
Yeah, it was really a blessing.
Let me think. What about like sex work? So everybody kind of make it seem like sex work is like a like it's legal, and is that and if it's legal, is that like a cute thing to do in regards to like you can make some money, or is it like a scam in the fine print? Like what's the tea with it?
You can really make money. Like I know a girlfriend of mine's, my daughter actually, she rents a room at the red light and she makes really, really good money.
Mm.
Like sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's high, but that's everywhere. But it's like secure. You pay your room, you make your money. It's always busy. There's like the tourists, every time they come here, they go straight to the red light district.
Everyone
wants to see the red light district. Like artists, my daughter told me that she's seen artists before. Like they will come and just pay you. Like it's not like the States.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. It's actually chill.
Okay, that's what's up. So, you know, it feels like there's some good things. Like, motherfuckers aren't, at least you can get healthcare. You can get healthcare, but it doesn't seem like it's... Because most of the people that I talked to when I was there that were trans, they were like, they were having some experience. Because, yes, it seemed like it's free and open as walking around, but they were having issues finding jobs. Because people like you to be way more conservative. Mm-hmm. And were at jobs, and so they were having issues with that. So I can see some positive things, and I can see some negative things with being there living as a trans person.
Yeah.
You're listening to Houston's own MP Trans 101. Now listen, I know that what is basic trans 101 for me could just be the beginning for you. So this is for your basic ass.
What's basic for me in this life could be just the beginning for you. Trans 101, yeah. Trans.
Come and get your lesson, baby.
LGBT youth should be safe at home and at school. They shouldn't have to worry about getting shot. They shouldn't have to worry about being bullied to the point of violence and broken limbs or bruised face. They shouldn't be getting bullied to the point where they're going home and having suicidal ideation. Our children shouldn't be dealing with that.
regardless of their identity, they shouldn't be dealing with that shit at all. Any student, any child. But it seems like there is an uptick in LGBT youth dealing with this, especially around all the negative rhetoric and anti-trans legislation that is happening around the country. All this adult shit that is happening are trickling down to the fucking students. Because it starts at home. And so it leads to us having somebody like Next Benedict being bullied and attacked, and then they're claiming suicide, which I think is bullshit. But it's other examples around the country when we think about that happened in Oklahoma, but when we think about Nigel Shelby in Alabama, when we think about Isabella Trentinor in Utah. These are examples of our kids being bullied to the brink of either being harmed or them harming themselves because they can't deal with racist and homophobic and transphobic students. And adults are being complacent about what's happening in their lives. According to the national survey from the Trevor Project, the majority of LGBT youth who are enrolled in middle school and high school report being bullied either in person or electronically in the past year. Bullying was reported more often by LGBT middle school age compared to high school age. So young folks are out here being bullied. Crazy. Transgender and non-binary students report higher rates of bullying compared to their cisgender LGBT students. Among the LGBT middle school students who reported being bullied, 29% of them attempted suicide in the past year compared to the 12% of those who were not bullied. And when you consider gender identity, them being trans or non-binary, that goes up to 32%. And we can fix the problem because when we look at students who say that they go to an LGBTQ affirming school, they reported lower rates of being bullied and suicide all the way down 55% compared to schools who were not affirming. This all should be common sense, but for some reason, it is not. Like, our kids should be fucking safe, man. That just, it doesn't make sense. We should be supporting them. We should be giving them some type of resources. We should be giving them the support they need to have these conversations about identity and support our teachers, support our faculty members in setting the standard of acceptance and affirming of people across differences. When we think about homeless youth, 40% of them are LGBTQ people because parents are kicking them out. So they're going from being bullied at school to being harmed at home to being homeless and being exposed to all kinds of other risk just by being out in the street. Like, this does not make sense. That if we care about kids, we love to act like we are protecting kids. The whole premise of this kind of transgender attack is because you want to protect women and girls and the students and women's sports and, you know, protecting the children from being coerced into trans surgeries and transgenderism because transgenderism is fake and it's all, and we don't want to give reproductive rights to people because we want to protect the unborn child and blah blah blah. This fake ass bullshit, like you care about children when we literally see there are LGBT youth out here at high risk and y'all not even doing the basic shit to protect them while they are in school, while they are in your homes. Like, this doesn't make fucking sense. What does make sense is all of our children should be safe from gun violence, physical violence, bullying, and shouldn't be thinking about killing their fucking selves. Students should be safe regardless of their identity. But as we see with the numbers, that trans and non-binary people are particularly vulnerable. So while we are taking care of all, we also have to take extra special care for people who are trans and gender nonconforming. We gotta do that. This has been Trans 101.
Oh my God, I want to thank all of our new patrons this week. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yay, 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 yay. So not only are you helping to sustain this particular podcast, you know, I also donate to other podcasts. I donate to other organizations. I have my finger on the pulse of the community, and I know a lot of grassroots organizations that are doing great work out here. So you're not only helping to sustain us, you're helping to sustain other people in a community, because I put my money where my mouth is. You know, that's just the kind of bitch I am. Community is fuck. So thank you. I really, really appreciate you. And if you have not become a patron, why have you not? You can donate as low as a dollar a month. It doesn't matter. Anything helps. Please. Do I have to play Sarah McLachlan and show you puppies? Like, what do I have to do? Do I have to resort to what the white people do to get you to give them money? Alrighty. Anyway, thank y'all. And the Patreon and PayPal link is at the bottom. Back to the show.
Outside of your amazing work when it comes to like your organization, you are a dance instructor, a model, an overall, like this overall trans beauty that's kind of taken the Netherlands ballroom scenes to new heights. And so your ballroom journey, clearly you just said it started with being introduced to ballroom, like when you were young and still in the Caribbean. But you moved to New York in 2012.
Yes.
And that kind of course, you're in New York City. You're the epicenter of where it started. So
the Mecca, yeah,
the Mecca of ballroom, like the root of it. So tell me about that experience, how you know, seeing it from afar and then actually coming in it and playing.
It was beautiful, but I was like, it was kind of short-lived a bit because of my boyfriend. He was a bit toxic. But just being in New York was really an experience. I will never forget. It actually made me into the person I am today. Like, forever grateful, even though I've had some really hard times in New York. Because, you know, if you don't got money out there, you go on the streets. And, like, I was kind of homeless twice when I lived there. I was also doing sex work. And then I met my boyfriend, and then he kind of like helped me and supported me for a few months, but he was also very toxic. It was a domestic violence kind of relationship. Like, yeah, I just had to run away. But the times that I spent with ballroom there really mold me into the person that I am today. Mm-hmm. Like, just finding out also like the history and the ins and outs of ballroom. This is when I found out when I moved there. Because, like, and back in the islands, we just saw the videos, we just saw the clips, you know, we were just into it, we were dancers. But going to New York really made me realize why was ballroom created, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was a really beautiful experience.
A lot of people don't understand the domestic violence in our community, and they don't understand how prevalent it is. And so if there is a girl that's listening, I kind of want to shine light on your experience with it, just to, you know, just to kind of help her, you know, because sometimes just hearing somebody else's story can help you get out of the situation or not feel shamed about even being in it. And so tell me, how did your relationship with that person start off, and when did you start seeing the shifts, like the red flags start to come up? Of course, you were in a situation where, like you said, you had been homeless twice and or get home in and out, housing unstable, and this person coming in, helping you out and you know, being a support system. And so when did you start seeing that shift in their personality to where it started to be violent? It starts to be toxic in that situation. How did it start and how did it kind of transition?
The way it started, I was staying by my girlfriend in Brooklyn, and she was like, I'm going to get some weed from this weed guy. We were actually going to go to Christopher Street, but then this night we decided to just stay in. And he came over, and the whole time when he was there, he just kept looking at me and just kept, like, you know, trying to get my attention. And this is how we met. We met, like, he was just coming to sell weed to my girlfriend. I'm probably sure they probably did something together. And then at the time, we were just hanging out and just being there, all three of us. And then my girlfriend started to, like, get jealous about it. Like, she was just, because I honestly didn't know that they had anything between them. But she was just like, it's fine, you know, do your thing. And then I just thought that she was getting jealous. And then she put me out of the house. And then he was the one that took me in. And where I realized that it was really a problem is when we were just, like, chilling in the bed. And he would just get up and just, like, start insulting me and start calling me, like, I'm worthless. Like, I don't have a job and I don't have money. And, like, it was just so weird. Like, that's when I really realized. And then what confirmed it, he was on a phone call with his doctor. And then he was, like, calling for some pills. I don't know which pills. And then she was like, but are you still on your medication? And he's like, what medication? Like, trying to play it off because it was on speaker. And then she was like, you know, your bipolar medication. This is when I was like, yep, he's bipolar. And this is why he's having these mood switches. But it was honestly one of the roughest times that I've been through in New York. And because of him, I couldn't experience more of barroom while I was there, because he was just so jealous and, like, holding me back, even from my mom, communicating with my mom. He was just taking, like, control of everything. He broke my phone a few times. He was one of those trades that were like, they would be with you in the room and say that you're your man, whatever, and just to protect you, you know? And then later on, we just kind of fell in love with each other. It was just a mess, child, really. Mm-hmm. It was really a hard time because he was like my first everything, you know? So I was heads in deep, like, in love with him.
And so how did you get out of it?
I'll never forget this. We had an argument, and where we used to stay was at his grandma's house. But his grandma's house, she had, like, a big house. So she had this basement room, like a little apartment in the basement, and that was his. And the grandma and the grandfather lived upstairs. And whenever we would have, like, fights or whatever, they could hear it. And this one time, this last time, we were having a fight, and it was getting really, really, like, really bad. And I tried to run away, and he was, like, choking me on the floor. His grandma had to come out and tell him, like, leave her go. You're going to kill her. I almost blacked out. Like, I was starting to see everything dark. And then I just ran inside the room from the grandparents. And, yeah, that was when I was like, that's the last straw. I called my mom, told her to book me my ticket back to the islands, and I just left. Yeah, it was really, 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 it was really an experience.
What did you learn about yourself?
To love myself. Like, I don't need anybody to validate that. Like, love yourself. You don't need no one. And you're stronger. Like, I can make it through anything by myself. And that's why I was afraid. I was afraid of being by myself in New York. I had no one. I had no family. I had my gay mother, but she kind of gave up on me because she saw that I kept going back to him, you know? So my fear was, like, being on my own, because he painted this fantasy in my head, like, he'll always be there. He'll always be the one to protect me. And I kind of leaned on that. And that's what I learned. Like, I don't need nobody to reach my full potential or what I need to do.
That's what's up. I love that.
Yeah.
So when you went back to the Caribbean, of course, you end up going back to the Netherlands.
Yeah, I went first to the Caribbean and then I came back to the Netherlands.
So during that time, that's when you got bit by the bug again, ballroom bug. And I guess that's when you, what happened in that? What was the, you end up going to school?
Yeah, I was going to school first when I moved here. But when I came back, I came back. And at the time when I moved here in 2010, ballroom was like nowhere here. Like we would be kicking in the club and, you know, voguing, but people would look at us like we're crazy. Like what's going on?
What's this?
And then I moved to New York in 2012. When I came back in 2015, my best friend, he was like, listen, we need to go to Paris because in Paris it's going down. Like they have this and that. And this is when I went to Paris in 2015. And I made my debut out there and people were like, oh my God, that's a femme queen. Like I was the first femme queen to actually like, you know, pump through. And yeah, it was history.
How did that feel?
Amazing. Like it really felt amazing. Like being able to just be in it, fully in it with no distractions. Like it just was so beautiful. And the way they welcomed me in, it was also so beautiful.
Was it a particular house?
It was Charlie. He was in Ebony.
Okay.
But I also joined the house, but later on, the Vineyards. But the ball that I went to was from the House of Ebony, Charlie Ebony.
So how did it grow into what it is now? Because you end up joining the House of Milan and then creating the House of L. So tell me, how did it grow from there, that moment, to you being this new femme queen? Because what were you walking at the time?
I was walking performance.
Performance. So you come in at this new femme queen performance girl. And then how does it grow into what, where you're at now with the joining these houses?
Yeah, I joined first the Vineyards. And this is when I started to like branch into my modeling kind of career. Because that's when I started to like take pictures and I would just have like photo shoots just to have them. And also with my best friend. He was a hairstylist and he would do a lot of crazy shoots. So that's when I started to like branch out into like the photo shoot. But the House of Vineyard also really pushed me and kind of molded me into the professional femme queen, you know, like with the shoots and kind of mothering a little bit. You know, that's when I kind of started to like mother a few kids because they were like, oh my God, you're the first femme queen. Like I need to get some medications. I want to transition also. So I kind of was like mothering people without me even knowing. And yeah, I just grew from there. First, it was the Vineyards. And when I left the Vineyards, it was the hardest thing I did, but it was also the best thing I ever did because this is when really, this is when I stepped up. This is when I was like, okay, I'm here now. I can do my own thing now, you know, because like in the Vineyard, it was kind of like, I had a mother. She was the overall mother of the house. And I was just a child, you know? But after I left, I just felt like this is when everything started. Like I started to branch out and do my own things. Like I got the initiative with the fun. And I started to do photo shoots on my own and just getting jobs, posting. I used to post crazy shit on my Instagram and would get the most coolest jobs. And that's how it all started. Then I got asked to be the mother of the House of Milan. And yeah, that's when everything really also kicked off.
How was that experience? What's that experience about being a mother of a house? Like what is your like principles when it comes to mothering a house? What's the point? Say it again.
It's hard as fuck because you have to, you know, take care of all these kids of yourself. Also, it's like you almost don't have the time. So, and also building the Milan, it wasn't like a lot of member here in the Netherlands. So it was like, you know, building it from the ground up, it's hard. It's really hard.
I love that. People don't understand. People think like, oh, I'm going to be the mother and not understand what comes along with doing, especially in a place that ballroom, it doesn't have the roots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's hard as well. It really is.
So how did you go into L?
We left the Milans to create do you know Stanley?
No.
I don't know if you're a ballroom.
I am not.
No.
I just know it. I just know ballroom stuff.
Okay. Well, we were all in the House of Milan and Stanley was the overseer of the House of Milan. So he would travel to different countries and like recruit these people. So Stanley was having some issues with the House of Milan leaders in New York. And then he was just like, you know what? I'm not going to deal with this. I'm going to leave. So, of course, all of his kids that he brought into the house from Europe, from Milan, from we all are going to go with him.
We out.
So we just all jumped ship and he created this house, the House of L. And it was kind of like a homage to his daughter because his daughter's name is also L.
I love that. How did the organization that you do now work? How did that from the grassroots of it starting? Because I see you have two other co-founders. How did it start and what was the vision and has it shifted since it started?
Yeah, the vision was always to support the Black trans. Like I told you, it's really hard to get medical, to get anything here. It's always a long waiting list. And I just kind of wanted to create something that I wish I had when I came here first, you know, somewhere that I can just contact and be like, hey, can I get this? Like, or help me with this. So it started with that. And where it's going now, like, we were on a break for like a year. One of the co-founders, they were kind of going through it with some personal reasons. And now, since this year, the beginning of this year, I'm taking it over by myself. And I'm kind of like working on a new mission board for the fund. So we're hoping to like expand more this year. Okay. They're kind of working on it. I want to get also a new team. So yeah, we were on a break for like a year, but now we're going to be back this year.
So... do you plan on coming back to New York?
I was supposed to come back this year, but maybe for later. But I'm not even sure because I'm throwing the ball, the Femme Queendom ball, in June 30th, and Latex is on the 22nd. So I wanted to come for the Sanaya ball, which was this winter. That's happening next month in February, but I'm paying it.
Okay. Because you are doing a lot of the photo shoots and the modeling work, what have been some of your favorite projects that you've worked on in your modeling career?
Uncle Muller, my lingerie, because I'm so obsessed with lingerie. I've always loved lingerie. And working with them has been definitely like the highlight of my career. I have also a Valentine's shoot that's coming out very soon. I did with them in October. So yeah, Uncle Mother, that was my favorite. Up to today, it's one of my favorite jobs.
Now, so you a body, yaddy, yaddy girl. You a thick girl like me. You get what I'm saying? I think that's a beautiful thing. And so tell me when it comes to like this body positivity movement and where we're kind of going in the positive, being more diverse in forms of bodies that we see. How has it affected your work and how has it affected your confidence, like in being a trans model in the field?
Yeah, I wish that it would be more representation about this, because we need to see more girls that look like us, you know, normal body girls. I have had a few moments, like when I did with the shoot, that I would feel like they would mainly put the skinny girls in the front or like give them the most attention. Like I have felt that, but I just don't let that bother me because me being in that space already is important. It's like everything for me because I'm representing a bigger movement, you know? So it has affected me a few times.
And you could be in a situation where you're eating it. And regardless if you're exactly. in the back or not, you still eating it, baby.
Exactly. Wait until you see the newest shoot, honey, the newest campaign. That one is so fab.
I always say love is my religion and I always lead with love.
I love that. I love that. I remember... you know, just seeing like Precious, who else?
Just seeing, there's so many people that are like, oh my God, like it's for, in regards to their body, and they're doing this like high-end fashion work that is like so inspiring to me that I'm like, oh, you know, I'm too old to be in exploring other stuff. Not really, I'm not, but I don't want to do that. But it would be such an amazing experience to me if I was a young person that wanted to go in it, because I remember back in the day, even you remember, I don't know if you remember, you probably do, Top Model, when they was talking about Kakara, and I'm like, Kakara wasn't even fucking big. She wasn't even fucking big. And so now seeing the opportunities and the doors kind of open up, it would be so amazing if I was in my late teens, early 20s. It would be so amazing because it's so different now.
Yeah, it really is. I'm just so thankful. And my agent is like the best agency.
What's great about them?
Yeah, they look for what's not in the normal beauty standards. Like, they look for big. They look for all the different stuff when it comes to that. They don't look for just the normal beauty standard.
Oh, I love that.
I love that. And it's black owned, so yeah, I love that.
I live for that.
Gimme euphoria, more than peace of mind. It's the joy in space to change the tide. Gimme euphoria, more than peace of mind. It's the joy in space to change the tide. Gimme it's a feeling and a high you never come down from.
Most of the time when we're talking about trans stuff, sometimes we're focused on the dysphoria, like the negative stuff that comes with being trans, and you know, it can kind of be a kind of downer. But so how I like to end the show is talking about what is bringing us euphoria. And so what is something this week or this month that has been bringing you joy? What has been bringing you joy? Just anything. It could be random. It could be small. It could be huge. It could be deep. It could be shallow. Whatever it is, what has been bringing you euphoria this week?
My kids. Like, I have this new daughter and she's just really amazing. And also my Valentine's shoot. Like, I just got a new picture today. So that's really bringing me so much joy. I can't wait till it's out. So,
When does it come out?
It comes out, I think, next week.
So the Valentine's shoot, your kids, is that it?
Yes. My mom.
Your mom. Yay! Hey, mama.
Even though she drives me crazy, she's different.
That's what they both do. That's what they're going to do. What has been bringing me joy this week? What's bringing me joy is being in the community with trans others. So many trans people. And this conference is full of queer and trans people. And I love it. And I'm learning so much while I'm here. And that is what's bringing me joy this week. Just being here at Creating Change. And conferences can kind of be boring, but It's the shit that happens in the middle when, you know, you're on break and when you're doing different stuff and you're at night when the conference, the workshops is over and y'all just kikiing and having dinner and having fun. That's the shit that I really, really love because it's joyous and you're just, it's just fire. It's just love, community, and just us fellowshipping and being dope and sharing each other's brilliance. And I just love it. It just has been giving me joy. I love it.
I wish we had trans conferences here.
You can create it.
I think it's inspiring me.
Get somebody to donate you a space. It doesn't need to be some big old thing. You can start off small. Get somebody to donate you a space. Get like maybe like two or three rooms or one room if that's what you can get. Get somebody to donate you a space. Come up with an agenda and invite people. Come up with a promotion of it and invite people to the space. And so once you get that following and you create this amazing space and that people love, keep doing it and people will start to get involved. It doesn't take that much to start, but you know, as you keep growing, then you're going to have to get investors and get a bigger space and that kind of stuff. So it's easy to start.
It's inspiring me to start it.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if you guys are like
pride organizations out there. Get them white people to fund you. Get them white people out there that claim they allies. Get them to give you a little coin to help you get some of these spaces together to help what you're doing. And yeah, that's their job. You're an ally. You're supposed to be transferring resources from your big orgs down to people who really need it. So that's what they're supposed to do. So get them to help fund it.
Okay. I'm going to look into it.
All right, so tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me on Instagram, Beauty Ima, BEAUTIE, Ima, IMAH. On TikTok, the same. YouTube. On Facebook, Naima Yansa. Yeah.
Yeah, so I will have all of those links down in the bottom. And I want to thank y'all for listening. And I want to thank you for joining me. I had an amazing time.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, beautiful.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, brother. Hey, brother. Hey, sister. Hey, sister. Hey, sibling. How are you? Hey, brother. Hey, brother. Hey, sister. Hey, sister.